talking about growth. Why do we keep talking about growth? I assure you it isn't about economics, though there's good reasons for it. It isn't about politics, though there are good reasons for that. It's about people. People in this country who've had pay rises, but not as high as price rises. People who know their jobs are changing and they want to be reskilled and upskilled for better paid jobs. This is about people who recognize that the health service needs more money, that our schools need more money, our transport systems need more money, but there isn't more money because there isn't enough growth.
Hello and welcome to this growth podcast from the CBI. I'm Joe Marshall, and that was the voice of Tony Danker, CBI Director General, in his first speech of 2023 at UCL just a few days ago. Tony's speech covered some uncomfortable truths for the economy, how we're already losing out on green growth opportunities to the tune of £4.3 billion, according to CBI research. But we're also losing out on capital investment and on people and skills. You can watch Tony's speech in full on the CBI website, but for now, stay tuned to hear from the man himself. But before that, I'm joined today by Saima Kolasi-Aldridge, Chief Campaign Director here at the CBI. Hello, Saima. Thanks for joining us and agreeing to interview your boss again.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Very glad to do it.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I hope you've had a nice break, and I hope you listeners have had a nice break since our last podcast too. Now, Tony's speech may have highlighted some bleak facts about growth, but it's not all doom and gloom, because as always here at the CBI, we are all about solutions. So let's hear from Tony.
So, Tony, here we are once more talking about growth, talking about the government's agenda, talking about the economy. Last time we were here, you agreed to give me a few days off for Christmas. So thanks very much for that. I enjoyed those 3 days very much.
Yes. How were they?
They were good. They were busy. I saw my children, which was nice.
Oh, right. You have children.
I do. Yes. And I managed to see them. But then some of us came back earlier than others in January. So we have been back on it here at the CBI.
I did come back a little bit later than normal in January, but that's because I was thinking big thoughts and writing big speeches.
Well, which brings me to we are in January and we have already come out of the traps with your first big speech of the year, which was, I thought, really brilliant. But others have called it a somewhat harsh analysis of the situation that we're in right now. But why is it so important to you that we're getting these messages out there?
Look, I took this job 2 years ago because I felt that post-Brexit, post-COVID, we needed a bold, ambitious growth strategy to compete in the world. And that in particular on the green economy, which was where Britain was leading the world, we could genuinely build an industry like financial services. And even more exciting than financial services, it would be true for parts of the country that haven't seen growth in decades. And the truth is, in the last year, 18 months, a couple of things have happened. One, we've slowed down a bit on our green progress. The government's been slow to action and planning and consenting and business models for new technologies. We already know we're brilliant at wind, offshore wind, but the rest was slow. And the Americans and the Europeans have raced ahead. So I sort of did want to sound a note of caution. I wanted to sound a note of warning. Now, look, there is a growth debate going on in the Conservative Party, actually, but I think it's the wrong kind of growth debate. You've got Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt going, we can't cut taxes. And you've got the other side of the Conservative Party going, no, we must cut taxes. It's almost as if the only way you can get growth in the economy is just by giving mass tax cuts. And so I just wanted to say, hey, guys, the Prime Minister's right about this, right? We shouldn't be going back to the mini-budget mistake and thinking we can slash taxes in an era of high inflation. But that doesn't mean you don't do anything on growth. And by the way, let's not be complacent about the green economy. And well, politicians get very upset when you criticize. But what I'm trying to urge, I think, this year is that actually we need forward momentum. There needs to be a sense of, yes, there's going to be a recession because of all the headwinds, but it's going to be slow. It's going to be short and shallow. And actually, we are taking action to generate growth. And so, not everybody liked it, except for our members who I think felt, yeah, damn right. That is exactly what we need to do. Let's work harder at getting forward momentum in the face of the headwinds.
Because that is the only way you get to growth. And the reason that growth is so important is because particularly with a recession like this, which hits households, we need growth to make things better, to you know, pay better wages, provide better jobs, all of the stuff that's really important to people who are voters. So that's why this is important. One thing that really stayed with me about the speech is it's very easy to talk about the problems facing the economy and the problems facing the country. And it's harder to come up with the solutions as to, you know, what is it that you can do? And you did that really, really well in the speech. So I'd like to give you a second opportunity, Tony, or a third, fourth, fifth, depending on how many of your media appearances we look at, to outline some of those solutions that you did in the speech.
Yeah. And by the way, look, I've always said that the CBI doesn't just moan. The CBI just doesn't protest. The CBI doesn't criticize. It offers solutions. Everything we do, we offer solutions. And we try as often as possible to make those solutions politically realistic or with the grain of the government's thinking. And we offered some big solutions here. So first of all, on the whole subject of investment and Britain's falling investment record, we're about to become one of basically the worst countries in the OECD for business investment. My proposed solution was the Prime Minister's proposed solution 6 months ago, which was that we marry the 6-point overnight increase in corporation tax with incentives for firms to invest so that you create a two-tiered tax structure for business. If you want to just pay profits, that's fine. You pay a higher level of profits than if you want to reinvest them, in which case you pay less tax. I think that was a powerful idea. It was Rishi Sunak's, not mine, and the government's about to go back on it because they're going to do the tax rise and none of the tax incentives in March. And I think the Chancellor should follow through. I think it'll make a real difference. So that's a solution.
On that, we totally recognize that you can't do all of that at once. But there's something really powerful about sending signals to business. So I think one of the things that we're going to be looking to do is have a roadmap to full expensing, have a roadmap to a successor to the super deduction, because that is also okay. You don't have to do, incremental is okay.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, George Osborne did this actually with corporation tax. If anybody is old enough to remember the details of George Osborne's tax policy, he turned around at the beginning of austerity and said, over time, over the period, I will bring gradually down corporation tax every year until we reach a competitive rate. And that had the great benefit of giving some of strengthening the elbow for, even at a time of austerity, for investors to stay invested in Britain. I'm sort of suggesting the same thing, almost in reverse, because we know corporation tax is going up 6 points. But to turn around and say, look, we can't afford to have full capital allowances and full expensing for investment straight away, so we're going to do it over the course of the next few years. You get all the signaling benefit now. Boardrooms who are thinking about where to invest, boardrooms who are thinking about whether to invest, turn around and go, gosh, the UK is going to be increasingly a good climate to invest in. So my view is it's a very, very pragmatic way forward. And I hope the Chancellor's listening. Yes. I assume he's listening to this podcast avidly.
I assume
so
he does.
I hope
also
he is listening to
Hello,
this.
Hello, Jeremy. I think, that ability to plan and provide a bit of certainty rather than cliff edges, which you can't plan for, is really, really important. Another really big theme for us was our green growth proposals. We put out some analysis this week, which I'm going to ask you about shortly, but also the government's own analysis, the government Skidmore review, made for some pretty uncomfortable reading. We know we're not in a race against ourselves. We know we started out really well in the green growth game, but we have a bit of catching up to do with others. And we're in a global race, not a domestic race. So what are the things that you want the government to do and you want business to do in order to raise the UK's green growth game?
Look, it's a really hard one. And I have some sympathy for the government here because, you know, probably we went into the pandemic rightly thinking we are leading the world on this. And we were, and to some degree we are, but we are slowing down and the rest of the world is speeding up. And so look, the big elephants in the room are firstly Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which actually is another name for a whole set of tax credits and subsidies to get green and renewable industries in America firing. It is deeply, deeply attractive to global investors who are shifting resources to the US market. And I have talked to several members who are losing investment in British green projects because the same money is going to American green projects. Secondly, last week at Davos, Ursula von der Leyen, who is the commissioner of the EU, turned around and said, we're going to try and keep up. We're going to have high degrees of state subsidy too. We're even willing to suspend state aid rules because we have to compete with the Inflation Reduction Act. Now, the British government are therefore left with this sort of choice, which is, okay, the others have just upped the ante. They will indeed attract investment. How does Britain compete? Now, the government doesn't want to compete in terms of matching that level of subsidy. Understand that. Not a very conservative thing to do. Conservatives won't like it.
And nor can we right now.
And nor can we in terms of affordability. And then on the other side of the fence, the other things that they're doing in the US and in Europe is they're speeding up permitting and consenting and planning and regulatory change in order to unlock investment. And at the moment, we in Britain don't want to do that either, right? Conservatives don't want to change planning law. So one hand tied behind our back because we can't compete on subsidies, and a second hand behind our back because we're not willing to compete in terms of the speed and efficiency of our planning and regulatory processes. We won't win. We won't keep up. We won't catch up if we adopt that approach. We need to have a response.
But I think there are reasons to be cheerful because this government does understand. And, you know, their response to the Skidmore Review was around, you know, we are looking at the things that we can do. That was the reason that they did the Skidmore Review in the first place. So what is it that we want from them?
Right. Are you ready for my long list?
I'm ready.
Shall we go into my quickly come up with response to the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yes, please.
Look, what I said in the speech was very, there's a three-part story, I think, for how Britain wins in green, continues to win in green. The first one is we build off our strengths, right? We have some things that the others don't have. We've got fantastic geology and geography, right? We are, I think Boris once called it the Saudi Arabia of wind, right? We have a lot of wind. We also have North Sea wells into which we can sequester carbon. So we've got some geographical advantages. Secondly, we've got an amazing City of London and financial community that is absolutely focused on sustainable finance. We genuinely can be the best in the world. Thirdly, we have got fantastic R&D academic research in this field and science. I think Exeter University has three of the top climate scientists in the world. And fourthly, our companies are way ahead on the race to zero across every sector than other countries. So first of all, let's build the strategy off what we're good at. Secondly, it does need some money. It just does need some money, either because some of these technologies are just pre-commercialization, right? It's if you're waiting for the private sector to crack green hydrogen, it's not going to happen. It needs to be government pump priming at the R&D end, how that happens. And secondly, the government should absolutely copy what it did with offshore wind. It created these things called contracts for difference, which essentially attracted in investors because government underwrote the risk and said, don't worry, we're going to cap your losses. But we actually think we can bring the price down and make this highly, highly profitable for companies. They were right. Let's do it across the rest of the technologies.
And it massively worked on offshore wind. And if we can't match pounds, dollars and euros, we can be smarter. We don't need to do that because we have a formula that works that we've used for offshore wind and we just need to replicate.
I think that's good. That the word smart is the operative word there, right? If we can outspend them, we have to outsmart them.
Exactly.
And by the way, it does mean my third and final part of the British fight back plan is we need to get serious about planning. I'm really sorry, but whether or not it's at a national level in terms of our views about onshore wind or solar, or it's a local level about what it takes to run cables to connect people to the grid, we can't not do these things anymore. I'm afraid that we need to get serious, or I just don't think the economy has got all its growth potential at all for the next decade.
And this is high stakes stuff because we have an energy security problem, which has been abundantly clear to us over the last year. And that's why it's important. We also have businesses and people who are facing rising energy bills. And we need to look at our energy security and our overall kind of energy supply to make sure that we're not fighting back on these things. If we can have a lot more homegrown electricity, we are less vulnerable to global shocks. So there is yet another reason to do it. But I think one of the big things that we have here is skills and labour. Because you've set out solutions, you've set out what it is that we need to do, you've set out the prize that we can have. But we can only get there if we have the people to do it and the researchers and the academics and the people to do the building and all of those things. So what do you think the government's labour market intervention needs to look like? And, you know, we've talked before about you need to make big decisions on that. I think there's big decisions on the labour market as well, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, when we ask members for their top concerns, it doesn't matter whether or not they're a small company or a large company, everybody talks about labour shortages. Yeah. It's always labour shortages. And it's the combination of us, being far less willing to do economic migration, and also the phenomena of the pandemic, which have left people wanting to stay more at home, people close to retirement choosing to retire early, people with long COVID and other health conditions, very often mental health and other things going on in their life, people that want to come back into work, but the childcare is now just too expensive. So you've got a whole set of reasons for why people aren't coming back into work, the net effect of which is we just have massive labor shortages. That's before you even get onto skills shortages. And what that's doing is it's exacerbating stagflation, right? Because people just don't have the people to grow, or the salary levels are being pushed up because talent is so scarce. Now, don't get me wrong, people need wage increases at a time of inflation, but you want to try and avoid the wage prices spiral. So I think if we don't do anything about the labor supply, we're not going to grow. We're not going to come out of recession. And the choice now for the government is which of the levers are going to give you the most bang for your buck in terms of solving those labor shortages, right? Immigration is an obvious quick way to do this, but, you know, it's politically unpopular, so politicians are a bit scared of it. Getting people who are sick into better states of health and back into the workplace. We'd normally ask the NHS to do that, but the NHS are so stretched. Trying to redefine the benefit system so that people on universal credit don't lose it if they come back to work part-time, right? That's a reform we would need. And childcare, right? We just need to find a way to make childcare less expensive. So I guess what we need to hear from the government, and I hope we'll hear from the Chancellor, is his view, the government's view, on which of the levers, when it comes to labour shortages, can we pull at what time frame in order to start to solve the problem, or we won't grow.
Yeah, totally agree with all of that. I'm actually cheating because I'm using the frame of your speech to ask you questions, which brings me to my final question and the final thing that...
Does it happen to be the fourth thing that I raised in my speech?
Do you want me to ask the question, or are you happy just to...
No, I'd like to hear the question, please.
Okay, right. I better come up with a question then. So we've talked about the four... You had four levers in your speech that government should be pulling on to make sure we can maximise growth opportunities in the UK. And the final one that is something that is very much within the government's gift, and that is on regulation. So, you know, the Valence review can come up with some pro-growth measures. We have the EU retained law bill, which is kind of hanging over us a little bit at the moment. So what are your asks and solutions around this one?
Yeah, look, there's a whole set of things going on at the same time here, right? There's a bit of Brexit legacy and how we diverge from the European Union. There's a whole question about regulation in Britain. And sometimes we confuse these things. Let me just start with a basic statement, if I may. I think Britain is overregulated. And I think almost all of that has got nothing to do with Europe. I think British laws passed by British politicians in a British parliament, implemented by British regulators, I think they overprotect the consumer. I think they're completely disproportionate. They're often rules-based, not principles-based. I think regulation needs an overhaul. That's really hard to do, by the way. I'm not sure if our political leaders have got the time, the temperament, the forensic knife to do that. Instead, people like to call for quick solutions like cull all the regulations, or if anything's got Europe on it, repeal it. I mean, I get why that sounds simpler. It just doesn't solve the problem. But you're right. Jeremy Hunt said, let's get Sir Patrick Vallance to look at our high growth sectors and work out actually if we made some regulation changes, even if we diverged from the EU, could that give us growth? I think that's a very interesting discussion. We are working with the Valence Review. I think it's got real potential because it's thinking long and hard and smart about how to make those judgments. It's talking to businesses about them. Unlike this thing we have, which is the Repeal the EU Law Bill, which basically says that at the end of the year, all EU law expires and businesses are going, really? Well, everything about product safety and employment rights and that all goes? What replaces it? To which the government's answer is, don't know, but it all expires. That sounds like the non-smart way to diverge from EU law.
Yeah, and we talked right at the beginning of this podcast about certainty. and uncertainty being the enemy of investment. So encouraging the government to provide as much certainty as possible when we're in a global race for economic growth is something I think we would want them to do.
Oh, yeah. Look, we can't go back. We had it in the last few years, didn't we, when Brexit was just done. We can't go back to those moments where nobody knows what's about to happen and nobody knows if you can ship your goods across the border and nobody knows, you know, if we're going to have we can't go back to any of that. You're right. We need certainty to invest. The Prime Minister's pledge to get growth and out of recession this year. The last thing we need at the end of the year is mass confusion in the business world.
Agreed. Tony, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What I quite like to use these podcasts for is to agree annual leave, because it puts you on the spot and you can't say no. It's half term coming up.
Sure. Well, what I thought we'd do is we'd submit your request for leave to the audience, to the listeners, and maybe we'd get a vote or a poll going.
Great.
As to how much annual leave you should take.
Thanks very much, Tony. Until next time.
Thanks to Tony for talking to us there. That was really insightful. Saima, you've covered a lot of the detail there, and we'll be taking a deeper dive into those solutions in later episodes of this podcast. I just want to ask you, how do you think the message has landed with government?
Thanks, Joe. Great question. I'm cheating because I have actually spoken to the government about the speech, so I can, you know, share some of that thought. And what isn't always reported in the media is the credit that we're giving to the government for stability, because that is really important. You cannot have any growth if you haven't got stability. And the Chancellor and the Prime Minister's focus post mini budget on restoring economic stability cannot be underestimated. So I think that is a really important thing to remember. You can do growth at the same time, though. And I think that is my challenge to our government friends, is that you can do both. I think we're not racing with ourselves. That's what Tony and I were just talking about. We're in a global race for talent, for growth, for investment, and all of the things that we need in order to grow our economy. We're in a global race for that. So I think it's about, you know, I'm sure you and I will talk about the budget on another one of these podcasts. We can't outspend people. We have to outsmart them. And I'm really looking forward to the budget to see some of those solutions that Tony and I were just talking about there.
Good stuff. Now, we've talked a lot about what we want from government, but what's business role in this? We've had a lot listening in. You've spoken to a fair few since. What can they be doing to support these solutions and these ambitions for the economy?
So I think I'll probably answer that one talking about workforce. So as Tony was saying, you know, we talk to business leaders every day, and the thing that they raise as the biggest challenge they have right now is on workforce. And you know, the workforce challenges and the skills challenges are certainly linked. And if you listen to the speech, or if you read it, which I recommend that you do, one of the things that Tony talks about and that I've spoken about in the past is the need for business to make sure that they're holding up their end of the bargain. So when you are competing for talent, you need to make sure that the offer that you give to potential employees and the offer that you give to the employees that you have is a good one, that invests in skills, that looks at flexible working, and that makes sure that, you know, they are, that people aren't leaving the workforce in the first place for any of those reasons. And when they're coming in, that they're staying. So I think that is my ask of business, is look at your employee value proposition and make sure that you are focusing on skills and you're focusing on the things that the workforce of today needs, so we can maximize the workforce that we have.
Good. And that's something that any business can do tomorrow, really, isn't it? Or today. It's just look at
Absolutely.
Those simple things. Yeah, good stuff. Now, I know you wanted to talk about the budget, and we're going to talk about it now, if that's okay with you.
I talk about the budget every day.
Because the nights are getting that little bit shorter. I'm just about being able to walk my dog after working hours. It can only mean one thing, that's that spring is on the horizon and a budget is coming. Now, the speech really set the scene for what we hope to see in the budget. But given the fact that there's not a lot of money to play with right now, what can we expect when it comes to boosting growth?
Yeah, just on the nights getting shorter, Joe, I think my normal technique of working out what time it is and when I leave the office by looking at the sunset is getting harder and harder. And I've actually missed bedtime a couple of times this week because I've gone, look at the time outside. So remind me about this, you know, nights getting shorter business. But on the budget, I think, you know, you're right that there isn't a lot of fiscal headroom. We haven't got a lot of money to play with. But that doesn't mean that you do nothing. You know, Tony and I were talking about a roadmap to a super deduction. If you can't do anything, everything now, do some things now, and make sure that you're signaling to business what your intention is. So you can do things incrementally. We are okay with that, as long as it is clear what end goal you are trying to reach. But then also have a look at the biggest challenges that are facing industry right now. And workforce is one of them. So what are the big plays and big solutions that you can make? So we talked about childcare on the last podcast, but, you know, tinkering around the edges on ratios isn't going to have the monumental impact that we need to have. You know, you need to look at more free hours and things like that. So my ask of government is to spend smart where you need to, and signal smart where you have to. But it's about making sure that you're doing those things. So when we get to the spring budget, business understand what it is that they're going to be doing for the next year or two, and how we are going to catch up on green, how we're going to take over and take advantage of our natural geography and our brilliant academic institutions and all of the things that are the future growth opportunities for the UK. I'm actually excited about it. You know, there's a lot in there. There's a lot we can do. And I look forward to it.
Good stuff. Me too. Well, look, that just about wraps us up for this episode. That just leaves me to say thank you very much for joining us again, Simon. It's been an absolute pleasure. No, thank you. And thank you, listeners. Now, our next podcast in this series will be coming your way in the not too distant future. So please like and subscribe to us on whichever platform you find your podcasts, and we'll be coming back to you soon. Until next time.
See you next time.
Thank you and goodbye.